Thank you, everyone, for coming. And if you don't know Sundress, it's easy to get to know them. The chapbook that Joan mentioned, When I Was a Girl, is online, available for free, along with a bunch of others. So take a look and learn about Sundress. I'm going to start tonight with a poem called I Saw a Large Woman. I saw a large woman sitting on a tipped-over Target cart, waiting for the bus, the first warm day of spring. I don't think she'd care about the news story. Target apologizes for labeling plus-size dress manatee gray. I think most women have more to worry about, at least the women who have to take the bus. She fights the patriarchy in steel toes and blue collars. The cart was cock red and thick plastic buckling under her. Thank you. This next poem is about uterus transplants. And I was doing some reading on this, and apparently a couple years ago, a woman had a uterus transplant and delivered a baby boy 2 years after the transplant. She was born without a uterus, and her mother donated hers. And apparently this was all happened in Sweden, and there are about 9 successful transplants. 5 of them came from, you know, mother-to-daughter transplant, and the other 4 were from close relatives. But this poem is inspired by learning that information. Inside her now. Her first home is inside her now. In a few years, she'll see her hand pull back, ready to strike, to spank, and she'll realize she's not the only one mothering. She'll call her child her own name and enforce rules now out of fashion. There's a double foreignness to what she's chosen. She's done more than most to invite the parasite. She hopes her daughter's inside is full, uterus lined thick each month, contractions to break down blood like waves, because this isn't like a wedding dress or a vase, because when she stops the anti-rejection drugs, home will disintegrate inside her. This next poem also came from a news story. In September of last year, a woman that I actually shared a name with, I share a name with, Jennifer Berry, she was accused, or let's see what, I have my notes here. She was charged with second-degree murder and manslaughter in the death of her newborn child that she threw out of a seventh-floor window in New York City. And so the name-sharing sort of got me, along with the horrific nature of the story. This is called I Can't Imagine Her Window. I can't imagine the mouth of her window swallowing the girl, the alley, its gullet bottom. It was raining that Monday afternoon here in Pittsburgh. Did she know that wind wet at her window in the Bronx? I have bled and named what bled from me. I have leaned out windows in the rain. I have opened cupped hands with nothing to offer but what pulled. I can't imagine the bloody heave, the heft from that hole. There wouldn't have been time for a name. Nothing would have changed had I appeared outside her shower stall and said, I'll take her. She decided this months ago. Thank you. Now, this is called Sleeping Apart. Sometimes he decides to sleep in the spare room, and there is a part of me glad. He wants the TV on, I don't. We both snore and bother each other with it. He says I steal covers. I say he moves past middle if I get up for the bathroom. In summer, there are never cool sheets when we want them, only body heat ripping through the fibers. But if this sleeping apart ever becomes permanent by chance or by choice, I will mourn my foot kicked out in the dead cold of winter, the pull back under, and the press against his hot shin. The times I did this, waking him, the times I didn't, but knew I could. My friend Mikey is here tonight, and I think it's his first poetry reading ever, maybe? maybe? Okay. And he knows my husband, and I write a lot about our marriage. And so he can tell him about this the next time he sees him. But I knew my husband, Mike, when we were in junior high and high school, but we lost track after high school, got back together 15 years later, married within 10 months of our first date. So I sometimes think, what would life be like had we gotten together sooner, or if that lapse hadn't occurred? So I've been thinking about that in sort of what happened in the time frame we weren't together, and what little clues there were in the universe that maybe he was out there. This is called Inside the Palm Reader's Tent. And it starts with a little epigraph from the Black Eyed Peas song, "You Sow 2000 and Late." Inside the Palm Reader's Tent. I went into a palm reader's tent in Atlantic City. We had just walked back from the ocean, sidestepping debris in the old sand. My sister, two friends, and me. I can't remember the feel of her hand on mine, or if she traced her fingertip across my palm as she read. She told me I would be changing jobs, would start working with kids. Teacher, hello, she was good. Then she said I would find love. Fraud, I was so alone. 5 months earlier, he was drunk with his cousin and cousin's girlfriend, watching the Black Eyed Peas on Dick Clark's Rockin' Eve. He never introduced a girlfriend to the family. They all thought things. I heard the story of that night when I met his family 7 months later, how he loudly told them he'd fuck Fergie when he slid down the stairs on a collapsed cardboard box, when he was accused of pissing on the dog's back as he pissed off the back porch, my now husband ringing in 2009. The Universe in 1997. This also has a short song lyric at the top from Chumbawamba. I get knocked down, but I get up again. It was the fall of dorm room floors and a pop song about pissing the night away. We asked the Ouija board if I already knew the person I'd marry. It said yes, planchet swinging towards Jay when we asked who. I was dating Jim. I hated him. I hated him for a long time after. I slapped at the board and stood up. My future husband, M, was stocking shelves 7 days a week in 1997. Our high school graduation 2 years earlier. I remember talking to him after graduation practice, telling him my cap was too tight, 6 5/8 instead of the 7 5/8 they measured to account for my curls. My homeroom teacher pinned a white carnation to my gown. I cut long slits under the arms so it wouldn't be as tight across my chest. When I picked up the heart-shaped planchet, I noticed the plastic bubble had cracked. I have two left, and they're both fishing poems. This first one's called River Monsters, and River Monsters, if you don't know, is an Animal Planet show where this British host, Jeremy Wade, goes and investigates freshwater attacks on people or animals. He fishes and tries to figure out what the mystery is. This is River Monsters. When Jeremy Wade shows up to investigate death by river monsters, it's usually catfish running the waters. Threatening legs, whole 8-year-olds, water buffalo. I caught a small channel cat once. He kissed it and held it up for the camera. Slender whiskers tickled his face. Their barbels always come in pairs, twin tongues tasting the muddy bed. There were lures lining the bathroom walls of the catfish restaurant in Kentucky Lake, free bowl of hush puppies on the table, one night stop on our honeymoon to the Grand Canyon. He ripped my nightgown back at the hotel, 2 holes in the back where his fingers slid through thin fabric, grabbing. I carried it, the fraying lace, through 12 more cities and back home to Pittsburgh. Things I've learned: rub frog poison on hands before trying to catch an electric eel for the numbness. An empty stomach makes a good hunter. I was numb before him. Empty for so long, the hunt ceased. He had poisoned himself, almost to the same numbness, but knew he had to keep touching me, discharge any stubborn electricity remaining. And I'm going to close with a poem called Panfish. We've caught bluegill before, but none with bellies this orange. Everything is brighter here, except the lake, dark with tannins from the trees. I float in these tea-stained waters. When he paddles behind one of the islands, I feel alone. I won't pull out a pole. I can't bait the hook. I have only touched fish with a single finger down a fat side. He puts each catch back into cold water, even if the next angler does the same, and the next, bluegill won't grow larger than the size of a frying pan. They hide in lily pads. It's only their hunger that brings them out. Later, we'll see a muskrat swim the length of our lakefront. A duck with three ducklings tomorrow will emerge from the weeds. Thank you.